Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
What's up, everybody? This is Will. Welcome to Moto IQ Radio. I'm a little bit under the weather, so please bear with me as we work our way through this. Action-packed show tonight. Big shout-outs to everybody. And our past couple of guests, you know, I got to give big shout-outs to Alex over at Dead Sport Garage. And Callahan, a really, really great guest. Tons of fun. All you rotary heads should have had tons of fun with that. We're definitely going to get him back on again, and we're going to talk more rotaries. And hopefully I get a few more rotary shops like Mazda Tricks on the show. We can talk about those magic spinning triangles. Again, if you guys want to hit me up, my name is Will. You can hit me up at will@motoyq.com. You can hit me on Twitter at MotoYQ Radio. If you want to advertise on this show, you can email Martin Gonzalez at mgonzalez@motoyq.com. Definitely go check him out. Lots of cool stuff going on MotoIQ.com right now. Some very cool articles. We're doing our project trailer. You can follow that and see some cool stuff there about what it takes to put together a really cool, very trick, not quite so custom trailer, but it'll have all the cool bits that you want. Asera just posted a new article up there. And tonight we're going to have, we have Jay from Vibrant Performance. So we're going to do some tech tips, and we're also going to talk about the Dakar Rally and some of the new things that they got going on over at Vibrant. A little bit later, we're going to have Ken Gucci. You know the guy. He just recently put the word out that he's going to be drifting a Greddy built Scion, what is it, FRS, FT86. I mean, there's so many different acronyms for that car. It's going to be pretty interesting. And then bring up the rear there, we have Tony Angelo. He's coming on the show. I was a little bit worried that he might not be able to announce what his car is going to be for 2012, but he definitely let me know, and we're going to do it. So he'll be on the show coming up last, a little bit later on, but up first, let's talk to Jay. Jay from Vibrant Performance, how are you doing today, Jay?
Hey, guys, how's it going? Going well. Very, very busy. But up
first, let's talk to Jay. It's okay though. It's a good thing though. I mean, busy is a good thing. And you guys are up in Canada, so you know you're part of the American family, as it were. And let's open up here. I mean, we've had you on before. We talked about welding. We talked about the fuse wire. If everybody hasn't checked that out, go check out thefusewire.com for all the details on that. You guys are still gonna be rolling that out pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, Fuse is going really well as far as interest and the feedback we're getting. I mean, we're getting, industrial and automotive and all sorts of inquiries, and it's going really well for us. So, you know, really keen about it. It's proving itself, and again, it's saving your ass when you're out in the field and you're in a tight spot and you got to get something welded up that you don't have a welder for, you know. So. Yeah, go to thefusewire.com. It gives you some videos and technical insight as to how it works. It's basically low-temperature welding, and, I mean, it speaks for itself when you're in a bind and, you know, you need some help with something.
Yeah, I'm going to track down a video right now so I can throw that in the chat room. And then you can go check out the past post for Moto IQ Radio when Jay was on before and we talked about the fuse wire. But you said you had a few other things you want to talk about, some cool things that are going on at Vibrant, at the offices there. Give us the details.
Yeah, sure. I mean, first thing, we just got in a huge shipment of new small aluminum tubing. So, I mean, before we kind of kept it to two-inch diameter aluminum tubing. Now we've got a smaller range for those guys to lead us into that intake manifold building suite. So, the round
right.
tubing in, you know, inch and a half, inch and three quarter is starting to pop up in our skews now. And, you know, we've got a lot more options for people to make, you know, say their own rad hose lines or hard line kits. And we're coming out also with the O-ring inserted V-band coupler also to match those profiles. So, and we've also opened up things like a 120 sweep or 120 degree sweep. 60-degree sweep, 30-degree sweep for a lot of our aluminum bends and stuff. So, you know, if it's hard for you to make that accurate cut at, say, 30 degrees on our old lines of pipe, now it's easy for you. You can just, as long as you cut it square, you're good to go, and it's done for you. So we're just trying to make it easier for the fabricator, and, you know, people are responding well to it, and it's available now. So it's really good for those guys who are doing a lot of the small work or the small detail work in the engine bay that, where it requires aluminum.
Very awesome.
Yeah, what else we got? Like I said, the V-band couplers, the flanges are starting to roll in, all the new flanges for the Schedule 10 and Schedule 40 piping. You know, say you're making an Evo 10 exhaust manifold with the, you know, the heavier gauge Schedule 10 or Schedule 40 pipe. These flanges allow you to run, you know, a heavier, more robust flange on the head. And it actually morphs the port from Schedule 10 down to the stock port size. So there's no, you know, like filing and deburring and gouging out excess metal that doesn't need to be taken out. So we do all that for you, and it's all going to be through nice, thick, half-inch plate steel.
That's pretty sweet. So for the fabricator, I mean, this is just going to allow things to go a little bit quicker as far as the process goes, correct?
Yeah, basically you're not wasting an hour in trying to made up a flange that's got, say, a square port to around you know, Schedule 10 bend or Schedule 10
right.
Straight pipe. So, you know, you're going to save yourself an hour at least, you know, trying to save all that smoothing and porting out that you might have to do normally. But it's getting to be that steel is the way to go for this type of manifold where the guys are using Schedule 10, Schedule 40 pipe, and, you know, it's just a very popular set of piping that guys are using to build a lot of these turbo cars now. So we just adapted about 25 SKUs to it, and it ranges anything from an Ecotec to a B-Series to a, you know, that all the Evo engines, you name it, it's out there. We even did it in some of our stainless line for the Fords and the new Mustang flanges we had too. So just making it really easy for the fabricator to get his job done, make some money.
Sweet. Very sweet. Yeah. I'm sure buddy's gonna be looking to see that roll out there. You also have you said you guys are getting some 3D tools in? You said that in the email. What's up with the 3D tools?
Yeah, we if any of you guys are listening or watching our Facebook page, we actually post once in a while what I've been up to in the office or what I'm fooling around with as far as projects. And the last couple of weeks, we picked up another R&D tool to help us, you know, do small part scanning. And you know what? I was a little skeptic at first, but this little scanner that we bought, it was from Next Engine. It's a Next Engine scanner. It's just allows you to do scanning for small parts or parts within a 2-foot area on, like, say, a 20-inch distance from the scanner. It's a stationary scanner. It works really well, and it gets the job done for us when, you know, some of our other tools are in use, and you got to get small parts scanned and make sure they're coming out from production correct, and, you know, so that all you guys, you know, using our product, it's making sure it's conforming to what we specify in the catalog. So it just makes, it knocks our quality level up, and it makes everything, gives you more peace of mind when you're actually picking our product off the shelf and using it. So it's a great piece. It basically just uses infrared technology to gather information by setting dots on the screen in profile of an X, Y, Z axis on screen. So all you have to do is just paint the part that you're trying to reference flat white, put some dots on it to index when you're meshing scans together, and it's basically like magic. It spits out an image and a 3D model for you instantly. It's really cool stuff.
Well, I'm really kind of interested in sort of, it's actually perfect because me and my technician of mine from my 9-to-5, we've been talking a lot about rapid prototyping and, you know, small run, high quality manufacturing, and a 3D scanning tool is one of those tools that is almost invaluable that goes in conjunction with rapid prototyping. So that's pretty cool that you guys have access to that. I think that's going to allow for very high quality and very part-to-part repeatability and high accuracy.
Well, I mean, the other side of Vibrant Performance is we do a lot of private label work, and when a customer or even when I'm developing something from scratch, when we have just a 3D model to work with, you know, we send it to the rapid prototyper, and it prints it out in plastic. It allows us to then take it into the factory and make it up as needed, and then we scan a prototype that's, you know, made from, say, the real materials or the sample piece. And it just allows us to verify that it, you know, say you get an instance where, you know, you can't measure with a vernier caliper from point A to point B, and the only way to do it is on the computer through a point cloud. So the scanner allows you to pick up those points very easily, and then, you know, you can change it and it gives you starting points for, you know, making alterations. And it comes with its own software, and it's easy to use, and it's, you know, I can cross-reference it with any popular software that's currently on the market, like SolidWorks or Rhino or, you know, stuff like that. And we're just taking in more and more tools to help make our job better and provide a better product in the end.
Sweet, dude. I'm just starting to get into some of those things, and a little bit of it is with the DIY community. And, so, you know, for me, it's a little bit of a geek fest because, like, I've seen some videos of people who will scan, and I guess if you're over the pond in Europe, a spanner wrench or an adjustable wrench, and they'll scan the whole thing, and then they'll put it inside a rapid prototyping machine, and then it'll actually literally print out a usable, to a certain degree, usable spanner wrench. And it blew my mind. And, you know, certain machines have, you know, certain qualities that you want to go for. In this particular one, the actual thumb barrel was actually printed out in red, and the rest of the wrench was in, like, a grayish blue, and it did everything. Totally blew me away.
This stuff is, like, never-ending. Like, people say, well, could you do this or could you do that? And it's like, yes, the possibility is endless. You know, there is no ifs, ands, or buts. As long as you can scan it and get that profile, I mean, except for doing like a cavity or something, you know, like a hole within a box or something like that. Obviously you can't scan it because it's line of sight, but as long as you've got line of sight to scan it at some way or form, you can replicate it to create your own product. Or, you know, for like the street rod guys that are out there, you could, you know, you can replicate parts that are just non-existent anymore and then create your own niche market. I mean, it's endless. It's really endless.
Well, I'll tell you what's cool, though, because you made a very interesting point, and I don't know if people know this, and don't quote me gospel, but I hear on Adam Carolla's podcast, he talks about Jay Leno's magic machine, because Jay Leno has a lot of very, very old cars, you know, steam engine cars, and so on and so forth. And since nobody really makes parts for these, he has to literally make them himself. And I believe they have something... Right, they have something like that. They'll be able to scan a part and, for the most part, print it out, and then somebody else can make an almost perfect replica of that particular piece. Yeah, it's going to be new, but still, I mean, when you're looking for like a 1934 piston or head or something, you know, this machine, you know, the conjunction of the scanning tool and rapid prototyping. These two things, it's going to be invaluable. And I think going forward, as a whole, as prices come down for these things, you're going to have a very strong situation where you'll have, you know, these small manufacturing facilities that will have the ability to, you know, bring a lot of these manufacturing jobs back to America, or at least North America as a whole, and, you know, show that it's possible that we can make parts here. And, you know, as the prices go down, the prices for building these things are going to go down. And I'm really looking forward to it. So, like, I'm really happy you guys got that. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. You know what? Now I think back on it, that whole kit that Leno's got in his shop to do all that stuff is essentially the mirror image of what we have on site for our facility. It's proved itself instantly. I mean, we also upgraded some of our software. I mean, We've always been running SolidWorks since I came on board with Vibrant, but now that we've been getting into servicing, you know, larger accounts and more workflow and stuff, we bought a CATIA translator for SolidWorks, which is a really cool piece made by CapVidia. It allows for seamless integration between high-end programs like CATIA, which OEMs use, and it translates it into, you know, a less expensive software package like SolidWorks, and it makes everything fluid. There's a little bit of work involved, but I mean, to make it so that you can print it on the printer or reproduce it by CNC is some really cool technology.
Very exciting stuff, man. I'm sure you're having a good time.
Yeah, no, I'm having a great time with it.
You guys got to push the limits, man. Make some cool stuff up there, and you just got to just show pictures like, hey, this is what we did with this, and we didn't know if we could do it, but we did.
Some that I don't talk about too often. I mean, I have my own project car. Right now, I'm in the middle of making hubs for my Audi that are bolt pattern of a Nissan Silvia to get the offset on some RPF ones to fit my brakes. But yet,
really,
yeah. So, but it'll have the same spline. It'll have the same spline to fit my stock axles. So, you know, it allows you to do stuff like that where you can basically make your own OEM parts. And it just makes it seamless so that you know there's no errors, you know?
Well, I'm wondering now if that will open up other opportunities for people who are trying to, you know, get a specific lug pattern. Like, for example, my boy's got a Volvo, and they got some oddball lug pattern. And, you know, unfortunately, it pushes him into a very tight situation with people who actually make rims for the car. And, you know, he comes from 240s and stuff like that. So, like, he wants something, but, you know, he's got this oddball bolt pattern. So I'm wondering if there may be an option that, you know, using some of these cool pieces of technology that he might be able to get the right hub and with the splines and everything else, but with the bolt pattern on the 240.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was...
Five lug.
Yeah, for me, it was going from 501-12 to 501-14, but, like, I have a huge set of Alcon calipers on there that run, like, a 13-inch rotor, but the rotor itself is almost an inch and a half thick, so it's the offset needs to be there, and I need the fender space, so I need to incorporate offset into my hub and then manufacture a brake hat that's going to clear everything and so on and so forth. So, you know, all these tools combined and then finding a guy that will do low-volume splining is, you know, makes it a dream come true for me. Everything can come together and I can get it done, get everything bolted up and have some fun, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, definitely keep us posted on that because that's a pretty cool project. And I think it pushes the limits of what you guys can do up there. And, you know, you might find yourself with a, you know, a really strong opportunity with that because that's a very interesting situation. That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
But let's move into the Dakar Rally. It just finished up not long ago. But give us the sweetness of it.
Yeah, you know, some of you guys know that I went 2 years ago, and I had a blast, time of opportunity of a lifetime. And really, what I wanted to bring up about Dakar this year, even though it's in the past now, the rally's over a week and a half ago. This rally in the U.S. does not get the exposure it needs to get companies and racing involved into this event. I mean, companies need to realize that there is major opportunity for exposure worldwide, in the sense that you get just the people on the side of the road seeing your logo or your car or whatever. You're looking at 5 million people on the side of the road alone just watching, let alone 70 million people tuning in over the week and a half to 2 weeks. So, and there's literally no American TV coverage other than Versus. And in Canada up here, it's a matter of, you know, you get on the net and you try and search down who's got a live stream or, you know, you catch, say, Robbie Gordon's Facebook page or whatever like that. And, I mean, even though the major OEM wasn't there this year, Volkswagen, they still had a Hollywood drama of a rally, considering scrutineering Robbie Gordon and his tire
right.
inflation, and then you know, Stephen Petterhansel in the minis this year, factory ride with Mini and BMW. You know, they cleaned house, but just the feuding between the two teams and the drama that goes on, and you know, trying to tune in is difficult here in America. But
right.
if you did find that that avenue to tune in and get the info, it was a real story. Like it's got potential to generate revenue for America and guys who are into motorsports in America. You know, so it's just sad, I think, that they don't cover it enough on American soil or Canada at all, for that matter. So it was the first year this year that a guy from Canada actually finished on four wheels. In the last 20 years or something.
Wow.
It's just something that I think needs to be brought up, that race, even though it's expensive to get there and it's a feat to get yourself entered, that race needs more exposure in America, period. So I just wanted to bring that up, and I think, you know, hopefully it'll expand more and more, that you know, if we get some more American guys down there.
Well, I mean, I think like any other motorsport, and I don't know what it is for America as of lately, but I mean, I know for our part of our segment, you know, it's doing pretty good. I mean, it could all do better. You know, we are starting to see a little bit of a resurgence with, you know, drag racing for the sport compacts. It's always been big for the domestic crowd, but I think we're going to see a little bit of a resurgence with the drag racing. You know, drifting is still on its rise. Time Attack, I think, is going to come back in a big way. But it's these other motorsports that maybe necessarily sport compacts are involved in, like rally racing. I mean, it's a really great sport. I mean, all the all-wheel drive crowd should be all over that, like wet on rice. But I believe, you know, maybe the scene is shifting away from some more classics when it comes to motorsports. Now everybody's moving more towards more lifestyle. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, I do see a bit of it.
Right.
I guess I'm more on the technical side. Like I look at the lifestyle side of motorsport is, you know, that's about
right.
selling rims and selling your latest carbon fiber wing. That's just my opinion on it. I like to see more of the technical aspect, but I like to see more hardcore racing on TV. I mean, hardcore racing for me, in just my opinion, is just like WRC, not so much F1, because nobody can really relate to it
yes.
as much anymore.
Yes.
But
yes.
WRC, you know, like more higher scale drag events, so on and so forth. Those are things that I think can people. I just think it's a better form of racing, but that's just what I'm into. So I mean, everybody's got a different look on it.
Well, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm always looking to take, for example, we had Alex from Densport Garage on the show. I believe it was last week or the week before, and we're talking about hill climb, which
yeah,
for me
yeah.
is an awesome sport. Doesn't get a lot of love, but it to me it feels like, you know, anybody that's in drifting, anybody that's in Time Attack, anybody that's
yep.
in any form of motorsports, go out to your local hill, because most of those cars are like anyway. Go up, try and get, you know, if you can get in and just go run. You know,
I should mention that, you know, I think I have a lot of respect for guys that enter hill climb and Time Attack, because, you know, you're out there by yourself, you're out there with one or two other guys, and that's it. And it's
right.
it's balls out. You do whatever you can just to make the finish as fast as you can. Who cares if you got a flat mid-race? Heck, just finish the lap and see what you post as a time. I mean, that's racing where you have to compensate instantly in a short period of time. And, those types of small races, I think, can take off, and I like that sort of stuff. You know, it's not just the WRC, like I mentioned before. Like, what I'm building my project car around is that sort of thing, like Pikes Peak and Hill Climb or Time Attack. You know, that stuff is obtainable for most of the guys, say, listening, or most of our market that, you know, we cater to when we go to SEMA and stuff like that. That's hard on a car, and to prep a car to finish those types of races is that's you know, good thinking, good preparation, and good patience. So, you know, hats off to those guys that can finish that stuff and do well.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and I really can't complain. And I really want to see more of our people out there racing to try and do some other stuff. I mean, try and do a hill climb. Like, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people would either, you know, literally shit a brick if Rado's, you know, Fwing 2.0 car showed up at some hill climb, like, you know, ready to run, you know, and or you saw, you know, Mike from GST, you saw, you know, the GSTL at Pikes Peak. That would be amazing. Or, you know, says, you know what, we're going to go see if we can, you know, crack 200 or 210 at Bonneville. We're gonna figure that out.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, and I mean that would be amazing to me. You know, that's what I want to see, and I would love to see our whole scene, just like starting to embrace all these other motorsports and go out there and be ambassadors and say, hey, you know, we're from the sport compact scene. You know, we're a little bit different. We do things a little bit differently, but let us show you how we do, you know, become friends. I mean, that's what I want to see. I want to move into that realm. You know, that's where I want to get to. I want to get to, like, for example, GTA Global Time Attack is going to be doing a collaboration with Formula Drift at two events this year. That's going to be amazing. You know, to see the fastest time attack cars out there on the same course that everybody that's there for Formula Drift is going to, they're going to see all those cars go whipping by. I mean, that's the sort of integration that I want to see. You know, that's the thing, that's the stuff that I want to see. And so, you know, I really want to try and advocate for that and evangelize about that. But, you know, it's motorsports, you know, it's racing, it's technical. And at the same time, like you said, and this is probably the most important part, is that all these cars are relatable.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be good to see them, you know, cross-platform racing situation and see how they do, see how versatile they are. I mean, I'm looking at some of the who's online here. I'm seeing that, you know, who is it, GST Mike's going to be at Pikes Peak, and I think Pikes Peak is going to be a big attraction this year with it being all paved, and I think it's going to be I think that race is going to start to skyrocket in popularity, and as long as they get their pit area worked out, I think it's going to be an awesome race. We're going to see a lot of different cars there now that it's all paved.
I think that's the big point. It's going to be all paved. That's going to change the game. More people are going to show up. You know, and they're just, I mean, that could be the deal breaker. That could be what breaks the whole thing wide open, is going to be the whole thing's paved now. And now you're going to see, I mean, just imagine if the entire Formula Drift, you know, top 32 say, you know what, that we're going to do a demo. We're all going to show up and we're going to run at Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
Special event, you know, no bonus points, but this is just for bragging rights, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be nutty. But
it's going to generate. It'll generate revenue for the whole area and motorsport. And then, heck, they're probably going to have to pave another way down the hill after everybody's up there. You know, so there's going to have to be a lot of improvements made with that whole race now that it's all paved. And I think they even talked about having a 2-day event, not this year but next. So obviously they're filling seats fast with it.
Well, and that's to be expected, but, you know, like most things, you know, it's cyclical, and I think it's just right at time to really start to see another motorsports explosion. I'm very, very excited for that. Hey, where can we go to get more details on Viber Performance and see any videos and the like?
Yeah, vineperformance.com. One other thing I wanted to quickly bring up that, you know, we're all talking about kind of fabrication and motorsport is that we've got a website also that's just opened up in the last little while called fabricationlife.com. If any of you guys that are listening or that are on the blog right now on the list here, go and check it out. And if you've got a project going on, go and post out what you're doing, like in detail, or, you know, if you need help with some welds or something like that, post up what you're doing. It's a kind of a magazine layout where, you know, we have it edited, professionally presented. So if you've got a project, post it up there. So it's fabricationlife.com. We have our Facebook page at Vibrant Performance. So vibrantperformance.com is our outlet for all our part number SKUs and what we've got available. And then we've got the fusewire.com also that's going to be, that's, you know, continuing to grow interest since we debuted it at SEMA and then at PRI. That went really well too. So check it all out. It's going really well for us. And I mean, I can't wait to get some more stuff up on our pages to, you know, show you guys what's going on. We got some interesting projects coming.
Well, everybody definitely go check that out. Let's get a few more numbers over at the Vibrant Performance Facebook page. Jay, man, it's always fun, dude. We definitely got to do this again.
Yeah, no, I love the show. Hope it takes off for us, man.
Hey, man, me too. So we'll see you again next month, and we'll come up with something interesting to rap about, and, you know, we'll have more interesting conversations.
Yeah, you bet. We'll keep in touch.
All right, Jay, take it easy.
Later, guys.
All right. Well, coming up next on Moto IQ Radio, again, my name is Will. We have Ken Gucci. Ken, are you on the line?
Yep, I'm online now.
There we go. You have glad to have you on the show. I feel like I've been stalking you for quite some time now.
No, I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
Show, Will.
Huh?
Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, nice, man. Don't sweat it, man. This is always fun for the drift shows, and it's always well attended. There's a gang of people in the chat room. A gang. There's a lot of people in there. But let's get started, man. Can you sort of tell us, give us your backstory, man, sort of how you got into drifting?
Well, I don't know how many times the story's been out, but I've had a pretty reckless childhood when it came to, you know, driving and legality. I started off driving cars when I was about 9, and this was all in my father's repair shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no drifting yet, just starting off learning how to drive a stick shift and getting to know the basics of just driving. And when I was about 11 or 12, I saw, some drifting footage from the underground scene in Japan, you know, where they were driving
right.
The canyon passes and the streets, and that kind of intrigued me, and I told my dad, hey, you know, look at this, check this out, and he thought it was cool too, so he had planned to take me out to a dry lake bed in what he had at the time, a 1985 Toyota Corolla GTS, so, you know, coincidentally, we had a car that kind of blew up the drifting scene
right.
Japan and in the U.S., so he took me out to the dry lake bed and pretty much taught me the basics of sliding the car around. And how he knew how to slide a car around, he actually started doing small Gymkhana events in Okinawa, where we're from.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So he has a little bit of motorsports background as well.
That's awesome. I'm a really big fan of Gymkhana. So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, you can kind of relate the two. You know, sliding around the cones, trying to get the fastest time in a tight track.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I started drifting. And, you know, it was perfect timing because that's kind of when drifting took off in the U.S.
Right. So when you first, what was the first car you went and competed in with?
So when I was about 14, they had the driver's search. This is actually before the driver's search. They had a little Ikaten amateur drifting event at Irwindale Speedway.
Right.
I believe it was 2003 or something. So my father requested that I drive an event, and they didn't allow an unlicensed driver to compete. So what we had to do was I had to ask my dad's friend if I can borrow his driver's license and his driver's license number just to register for the event.
Wow.
Well, what had ended up happening was we finished in the top three of the event, and my name kind of just grew from there, and people found out that I was still, you know, this young kid with no driver's license drifting a car around.
I remember this story, and I think that's when I became like a big fan of yours, was when I heard that. I was like, you know, it reminds me of me a little bit, just, you know, wanting to get behind the wheel, you know, driving without a license, that sort of thing. So, you know, I've been a big fan ever since then. And, you know, there's been a few videos and covering sort of you working at your dad's shop and everything, and you working on your own vehicle. So following your story has always been fascinating to me, and I've been a big fan, and you got quite a few fans in the chat room. And I have a question from a fan actually in my email box prior to the show, and we'll ask you that
sure.
A little bit later.
Uh-huh.
So over the years, you know, what have you driven?
I've driven a fair share of cars, a lot of different kinds, American cars, Japanese cars, European cars. But I first started off drifting, you know, the traditional AE86. And
right.
I moved on to another traditional drifting car, a Nissan S13 240SX.
Right.
And that was actually the first car that I did my first, you know, engine swap. And it was the car that actually taught me a lot about, you know, mechanical stuff, motor swaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working on cars in general. And then I've driven, you know, Mazda RX-7s. And when I first started competing professionally, which was in my S13 240, but
right.
Shortly after, I hopped into a Ford Mustang. I've driven that for about 3 years. And
right.
A lot of different cars in between, but now I currently drive drive for the Sun Racing Drift Team.
So,
and I was in the TC for 4 years, actually.
Has it really been 4 years?
Yeah, it actually flew
wow.
by really fast.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I remember you getting in the car. I was like, you know, this car looks like it has lots of potential, and I'm pretty excited for it. And it seemed like it just sort of flew by. Like, to me, it only seemed like it was only 2 years. So, like, wow, 4 years.
Yeah, believe it or not, a lot has happened in between. And we've had a lot of good times and a lot of bad times. But in the end, you know, I'm very happy that I'm still part of the team.
Yes, we are. I think everybody is, too. So tell us about the new car. I think everybody was sort of very, very anxious to hear what was going to happen. What were you going to be in? So when the word officially came out, you know, I saw you had breathed a relief that you can actually talk about it.
Yeah, sigh of relief. Oh my God. Yeah, that took off a lot off my shoulders. This program that I'm about to tell you about has been being planned with myself and a Sun Racing team for a couple of years now, actually, not just a year,
really?
But, maybe, yeah, 2.5 years. Probably.
Wow.
And I couldn't wait for this day to come where I can actually talk about it. But I'll be switching over teams in a car. I'll be driving for the Gritty Performance Scion Racing FRS, which is the new Scion rear-wheel drive 2-liter compact sports car that's coming out in the spring of this year.
Yeah, I'm 2 years? Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a long time, man.
Yeah, I've held my breath for that long.
Dude, man, that's crazy. I don't even know if I could hold on to something like that. That's huge.
It is huge because, you know, this news came to me in a very exciting manner, and I really wanted to tell everyone, and I wanted to blast it all over the internet on Facebook and Twitter, but
right.
as tempting as it sounds, you know, I just had to hold it in and, you know, wait for this moment. And you know, I can't even start to explain how excited I am for this program to kick off.
Yeah, I mean, tell us the story, man. I mean, how did that go?
The story behind what the planning of the car or how.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, sort of them approaching you about getting in the car and sort of the process that has brought you to where you are right now.
Well, you know, like I mentioned, I was in the TC for 4 years, and originally we were also talking about putting me in the second-gen TC, converting that to a rear-wheel drive, but instead we gave that car to Frederick Ospo and the AEM team, and
right.
I had to pretty much hold off on another year just so I can be in the FRS. So I'll be the official first driver in the Nissan FRS stateside, and yeah, so, you know, what I had to give up before, I take back now.
Wow. Wow. So you've known about the FRS for this long?
Yeah. Well, at first it was kind of a rumor that Nissan was coming out with the rear-wheel drive compact car. And
okay.
We didn't really know. I mean, I was talking to some of the Toyota people in Japan, and they were telling me that the program was actually stalled for even a long period of 6 months just because Toyota and other associates didn't really agree upon some stuff they were planning. So this whole project of developing this rear-wheel drive compact car has been, you know, it's been coming for a long time, actually, longer than 2 years. But, yeah, when we first found out that it was really going to happen, I was just really excited.
That's awesome, dude. So what can you tell us about the car? I think everybody's heard some numbers, horsepower numbers.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about the car?
You know, the funny thing is I'm actually up north right now filming the very first Scion FRS commercial. And,
sweet.
I mean, I can tell you everything about how this is going and also about, you know, the basics of the car. But the car is a 200 horsepower, weighing about 2,700 pounds, and it's a rear-wheel drive.
Okay.
It's not all that powerful, but it's a lot of fun to drive because you really, really have to rely on your driving skills to get this car around the corners, around the track. And
right.
when you first get into it, you'll notice how low you sit in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm.
The center of gravity is actually lower than a lot of sports cars out there. And when compared to a, you know, car like a Porsche Cayman, the center of gravity is actually even lower than that car. So that's kind of a testament to what Scion and Toyota is trying to bring to the sports compact sports world and a community. And I believe this car is definitely going to change the game for a lot of the tuners out there.
So who do you think is really going to go after this car? People who are looking at a Miata, they're not going to look at this car and think this car is going to be more attractive. I mean, who do you think that this car is mainly marketed towards?
You know, honestly, I believe this car is marketed towards anyone. You know, the average Joe who just likes to wrench on cars, or, you know, the guy that just simply wants to keep it in the garage and stare at it, or, you know, the teenager who wants to take out onto the track. And I think this car
right.
can be enjoyed by anyone, pretty much. The driver, the guy, that show queen guy. Honestly, the automatic one is not bad at all. It has a rev matching downshifting technology.
Really?
And the shifting is actually pretty similar to an ISF. I mean, it's very responsive. It's quick. And the flipping throttle is just amazing.
Ooh.
So anyone can drive it. I mean, you don't have to drive a stick shift to enjoy this car.
Interesting.
Oh,
it
comes standard Torsen diff.
Ooh.
That's the awesome part, yeah. All of them.
Really?
Yep.
That's nice. So,
it is nice.
I think that really says a lot about how much research they did in thinking about this car and who's going to really pick it up.
Speaking of research, it's cool because, you know, I'm with the sound people all the time, and they actually read all the comments and feedback on the social media network. I mean, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, you name it. They read everything, and they try to get as much feedback as they can so they can cater to their consumers.
Wow. That's amazing. So with that, the car you're going to be driving there for Formula D, can you tell us about that car?
Unfortunately, there's not much I can tell you at this point. I can tell you that it's going to be targeted at around 550 to 600 horsepower. We're not trying to shave off that much weight, actually, because, you know, obviously the tire-to-weight ratio, we don't want to run on skinny tires in the rear end. So we're
right.
trying to keep the car not too light, but fairly on the heavier side compared relative to the stock car. We're going to try to add a lot of angles. Unbelievable amount of angle to the front steering.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a head turner. I hope.
Well, I think
and you know,
I think
Gritty knows what they're doing with the build, so.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I mean, I think it's been a while since we've seen sort of a flat four in drifting, so this should be pretty interesting. With the are there any other partners that are working with you on the car, as far as suspension or brakes or anybody?
Yeah, we still have Hankook Tires. They've been with me since last year, and I believe there's one
okay.
of the tires. I don't know if you saw my run last year at Irwindale against, you know, drivers like Dai and Tyler, but we were one of the few drivers that was throwing a whole ton of smoke around the Irwindale bank, the Toyota Speedway bank. So,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave those tires for anything else. We also have TW
right.
suspension for suspension, since you mentioned that.
Okay,
and,
cool.
They were actually, I don't know if you know about the video that got leaked when we were at Laguna Seca.
You know, I've seen some posts about it, but I haven't really seen a video. What's up?
Yeah, we were actually, you know, driving the Gritty Performance Sun FRS out there, and KW was out there tuning in our suspension. I mean, we only had like a day and a half to get it dialed in, but yeah, they're one of our bigger partners now, helping us with the suspension stuff.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. So big shout outs to KW. That's awesome. Wow,
and we
dude.
Still have companies like Rogue Status, you know, DTA, my apparel company.
Okay.
And
well,
we have
I'm
new
really
partners looking... that are coming up. I don't know if I can mention them, but
go for it. Go
it'll
for
be
it.
It'll be a shocker.
Well, you know, as those details come out, man, let me. You know, I mean, whoever you're working with, man, let me know, and we'll put it out on the show and get them some love too.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about you in general. I mean, you know, what do you have in the garage?
I you know, believe it or not, I still have a 1985 Toyota Corolla GTS coupe that I drive almost on a daily basis, and I try to support the grassroots drifting scene as much as I can, because, you know, that's kind of where I came from too, the grassroots scene. So I'll try to go to tracks like Adams Motorsports and Riverside every Thursday. They have a
right.
night drift every week. So I'll go out there with my Corolla and, you know, drive along with the grassroots drivers and see if I can help them out or help the scene out or just practice in general, because you never know what kind of a new guy out there is going to come to Formula D next year and kick ass. So it's always good driving with the grassroots scene and getting to know everyone out there.
And it's actually kind of interesting, because I wanted to ask you, I believe, man, maybe like 2 months ago, or maybe even a little bit longer than that, you had a Cressida as well, right?
Oh, that was almost 2 years ago. Yeah, I had a Cressida, 1989 Cressida with the 2J that I took to Adams 1.
Now, I've been looking into that car, and it totally wasn't on my radar, and I don't even know the reason why, but it's pretty dope, and it's, you know, pretty fun. What can you say about that car as far as being drift worthy?
Oh, you know, it's a fairly cheap platform, and at the time when I built it, I was actually in love with big four-door sedans, because when four-door sedans or big cars are sliding sideways, it just looks massive and there's huge impact that you just visually see and feel. So, you know, I thought I would build one and, you know, try it out for a little bit, but I ended up coming back to Corolla. So that says a lot about how a car like a Corolla, which is underpowered, it's rear-wheel drive, lightweight, can make a big, huge impact on the drifting scene. So I think, with that said, the Sound FRS that's going to be coming out in the spring this year is going to leave the same kind of impact that the A86 originally did.
Well, everybody's excited for that, no doubt. I was really looking forward to seeing some of those videos. And a lot of the rendering car, everything else. So, no doubt, pretty excited about it. I'm going to take this question here from, it came into my email box from Jake. He says he's a beginner level drifter in Topeka. They have about 4 or 5 practice events a year at their local track. The problem is that they can't expand their skill level or their venues because there just aren't enough people willing to pay the money to register. But then they complain when there aren't enough places to drift. What do you have to say to people, and any things you could recommend to him to help him increase his skill level.
Yeah, you see, the problem is I was fortunate enough to start drifting in LA, and you know, in the LA region, there's a lot of track events that are going on pretty much on a weekly basis. You know, we have tracks like Adams, we have Just Drift, which is held in Willow Springs, and we used to have events by Drift Day from Club 4AG. So I feel like I was very fortunate that I was surrounded by all these drifting organizations. But the thing is, to get better at drifting, you just got to be able to go out there and enjoy it. You know, I really don't know how to help that situation, because if you can't really find a venue, I really don't like encouraging street drifting.
Right.
So, yeah, you just got to gather everyone who wants to go driving and have them pay up or pitch out for track rental time. But, you know, the funny thing is, a lot of parking lots, or a lot of the owners who own parking lots, are actually open to renting out their parking lots, you know, for a fee over the weekend. And they're not that expensive, to be honest with you. So
right. If
you can reasonably, you know, agree upon a price, the parking lot, and they have some cones. I think that's a great opportunity to go out there in a safe manner and practice drifting around cones.
Well, there you go. I mean, there's an opportunity. I mean, if people aren't willing to pay up, you know, you got to find a way to find out how to fill that hole in the market. So with that, you know, go out there and ask questions. I mean, asking questions is free. It's a phone call.
Right.
Say,
right.
You know, hey, you know, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm trying to put together. You know, what would it cost to rent out your parking lot on a weekend? And then just put the word out and say, hey, this is what it's going to run. You know, make sure you bring a helmet. You know, these are your basic, you know, safety requirements, yada, yada, yada. And people show up and you go run. I mean,
right.
You know, when in doubt, try and do it yourself, right?
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, you only get better if you're surrounded in a safe environment.
I agree 100%. So definitely scout your parking lots correctly. Set up your courses correctly. I guess there are ways to set up a course that might emphasize certain skills, like transitions or tandem, would you say?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, obviously the bigger the lot, the more space you have to practice a lot more techniques. But you can start from the basics, like doing donuts around a cone or figure eight, or even, you know, two car figure eights. That way you can practice
right.
J turns. I mean, what we used to do with the Club 4AG days, with drift days, we used to lay out three different track layouts in a big parking lot at California Speedway. And one turn would be like a simple J turn. Another one would just be a lot where you can practice donuts. And there would be the main, you know, the advanced level course where there's a mixture of J turns, figure eight transitions and whatnot.
Right.
So if planned accordingly, I think it can be done.
Well, I guess, and that's a strong point too, is because there are several different ways to initiate, several different ways to increase your angle mid drift and so on and so forth. You know, figure out what skills you want to work on. And then I guess you have to set up your course that way. Right.
Yeah. Also one thing which helped me a lot before, when I didn't have a license, but I still wanted to drift, was playing video games, like kart racing games, Gran Turismo or anything. I
right.
actually played a lot of Gran Turismo as a kid and practiced drifting in a game. And I feel like that helped me a lot. You know, it visually trained me to look ahead of corners.
Mm-hmm.
And I would try different types of initiations, even in the video game. And then, you know, I would go out with the car and try it out in real life. But it helps out a lot, and if you watch a lot of videos, I mean, nowadays you have access to YouTube where you can watch drifting videos for free, so my suggestion is, if you want to get better, just watch how everyone else drives. You can learn from their skills and learn from their mistakes as well.
Definitely. Awesome point. And, you know, I watched the Drift Bible. It was an amazing video, and I've actually seen some videos of you with the Drift King himself, so... He kind of goes through all the how to initiate, different ways of initiating. You know, again, just go look at the videos. See how they're doing it. Watch their hands. Watch their feet, you know. What would you say? What do you look for when you're watching a video trying to dissect a competitor or a driver?
was it a question?
Yeah. The question was, like, if you're watching a video of somebody that you, like, somebody that's in Japan,
right.
Try to dissect how they're going into a particular set of turns. Can you figure out, like, how they're moving their hands, shuffling their feet?
Oh, I look at everything. I mean, I even look at, I try to look at their head or their neck movements or even their eye movements to see what they're looking at.
You know?
And the question is, like, how do they get so close to the cars in front of them, or how are they so good at tandem? I mean, it all comes down to, you know, obviously, experience and trial and error. But if you can learn from other people's mistakes and not make the same mistakes yourself, then I feel like you can take a few steps ahead of everyone or a lot of people out there. So I watch videos of drivers in Japan who are really good and try to see where they're looking, their seat position even, their car setup, their you know, everything, their footwork, their steering work, how they have their e-brake handle set up, like how close is it to their steering wheel. All the details I'll keep an eye out for.
Interesting. Yes, that's one of the things. It's kind of like watching, like, grappling or jiu-jitsu videos. Like, you watch them, you're trying to figure out what they're doing and, you know, where they make mistakes. I figure you can apply the same thing to drifting, you know, watching, you know, the steering angle of the wheels, looking at their head position, like you said. Those are, I guess, all those things. I guess you can also look at when they're applying the handbrake to initiate, right? As far as timing goes?
There's no one way to do it either. I mean, we can use a mixture of all these different techniques in one single corner.
Right.
We can use a clutch cake, e-brake, you know, weight transfer, it all in one initiation. So there's really no one way to approach a corner. I mean, it's just, you know, you just got to go out there and practice and see which technique applies to you the best.
Okay, very cool. So what kind of cars do you really enjoy driving? I mean, just as a personal person, just getting around town.
You know, I really enjoy driving a lot of different cars. I mean, whatever has four tires and goes forward, I'll try to drive the wheels off of it. I mean, I don't have the cleanest record for keeping a clean car, but front wheel drives, rear wheel drives, all wheel drives, you know, two wheelers, I'll drive anything.
Are there any motorsports that you want to get into?
Yeah, I do want to try out rallycross. I've done a few rally events in the past, but never have I done like a stadium rallycross. Driving against like three other rally drivers, and that looks really exciting watching it on like X Games or something. So yeah, it'd be cool if Cyan can get into it and put like a two-wheel drive or something for a two-wheel drive class, but that's something that we'll have to talk about. And you never know. I mean, we might see one in the near future, we might not.
Yeah, you never know, right? I mean, I guess, you know, there's tons of opportunities, right? So that would be kind of cool. Let's see here. What's your dream car?
Dream car?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know,
well,
honestly,
like,
I don't,
maybe like
I don't,
two or three.
It used to be the R32 Skyline GTR, but
really?
Again, but I actually owned a GTS version of it, and I wasn't that impressed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved on to like, you know, a Toyota Supra, but you know, obviously just to, they're still kind of expensive, but if it's a dream car and if I can have anything in the world, I don't know, an LFA maybe?
LFA?
Yeah.
Really? That car is kind of hot. The LFA is kind of hot. No lie. Totally.
You know what? I've never really thought about a dream car. I mean, I have a dream job, and I'm currently living that dream job, so
I can't really
complain about that. But yeah.
No. I mean, I guess there's so many cars out there. I mean, you know, there's classic, you know, Datsun Z's that look fantastic. You know. There's the whole RWB craze right now. One of those Porsches would be probably pretty dope. But no doubt, man. No doubt. Are there any tracks that you want to drive that you haven't been to yet?
Well, there's a track that I haven't driven on, but so has no one else. The Circuit of the Americas that's coming up this year next. That'd be great. That'd be great in Texas.
So you're looking forward to that one? Are you really looking forward to that one?
Yeah, let's see if we can get a drifting event in there.
Well, the guy, people down in Texas, man, they really want Formula D to come down there. Like, you know, it's they're pushing pretty hard. You know, maybe 2013. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Let's see. Are there any questions from the chat room? I have a question for you about the time back. I'm a big fan. Have you thought about getting into time attack or any other sort of motorsport that you could, you know, possibly take your drift car or something close to that into?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in time attack, and I've done a few of those in the past too. It's pretty much like a race against yourself. You know, you're the only car out there on the track, and you're trying to defeat the best time that you put out on the last lap. So, yeah, if I had the opportunity, I would definitely do time attack. With even with my drift car, we'd just change out the suspension settings and the brakes and the tires setup. But I think it'll be a great opportunity to see how well the drift car does on a time attack course.
100%. I mean, Dye was running in the Moto IQ Pacific Tuner Car Championships last year, and he took that one as well. So I'd love to see more drifters in time attack. I think it'd be fun. There's gonna be a GTA combo event at Road Atlanta coming up here this year. I'm a little bit surprised, but you know, it should be fun. You know, I think Global Time Attack and Ken Gucci, you know, it's gonna be dope, man. What do you say?
The interesting thing about, you know, road racing and drifters is that it's been proven that drifters can go into road racing and kick ass pretty much. I mean, you've seen Reese, Tanner, you know, Tyler, all those guys in road racing, and either they've won or they've done really well. You know, you see Dye and Time Attack Series winning a championship. And I actually did the Toyota Pro Celebrity race last year and won in the pro class. So I think that's a testament to all the drivers out there who don't think that drifters can actually go straight. We actually can. And we can do it too.
Well, one of the people in the chat room, are you familiar with the GST Subaru Impreza L?
The time attack car?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike doesn't have a driver for the Road Atlanta event. He says if you want to drive it, you know, you can get into it if you want.
A.Gucci@gmail.com.
All right, I'll put you two together. We're going to put you together. So get his email at the end of this, which we have Tony Angelo waiting on the line right now. But, Ken, where can we keep up with you, man?
You know what? Social media is the boom right now. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Gucci, Facebook Ken Gucci, or you can also catch me on scionracing.com or their Twitter feed, Scion Racing, or even Scion's Facebook, just Scion. Everything. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the nine yards, everything.
Very cool. No trolling, okay, everybody? Be nice to Ken, okay? He gave out his email address. Don't go willy-nilly with it, because it'll wind up in the spam box, for real. Ken, man, it's been fun. We got a game with you throughout this season, man. I'll have you back on the show.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, great being here.
Hey, no problem. Everybody, Ken Gucci, go check him out. Facebook, Twitter, the whole nine, you know, the guys out there. We will we'll have him back on. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Thanks.
Coming up next here, we have Mr. Tony Angelo on the show. This is Moto IQ Radio. I'm sure everybody's been waiting to have him on the show as well. Looking forward to it. And, Tony, are you there, boss?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, man, I got you. I had you on mute there for a second. I was still talking to Ken. But that's cool. So, dude, welcome to the show, man. Glad to have you on.
Oh, cool. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a hunt, but that's cool, you know. I mean, it's I think ever since I think I'm not gonna lie, this might sound a little stalkerish. I think you were at a FedEx Field event in just outside of DC several years ago with the Falcon team, and I think you and Forsberg and a couple other guys were out there. I was at that event. It was like a drift demo. Very cool event. Pretty sweet, man. Pretty sweet stuff out there.
Yeah, I mean, that was like 7 years ago or something. But yeah, those are pretty wild years. Those are some good times. I'm sure if you watch that, we really used to cut loose at those demos and have fun. So it's cool you've been around that long.
Yeah, I brought a few of my buddies out there. We went out and had a great time. It was just an amazing event. I don't think we had seen drifting on that level, even though it was only like a demo. But I think there were some local guys that came out. Mid-Atlantic Motorsports showed up and brought a couple cars out there. So it was really dope, and I was really glad to see you guys out there. I wanted to come up and shake your hand, but I was sort of geeking a little bit. So, you know, don't guess me.
All right. Well, that's cool. Next time, you better come over and shake my hand.
Well, most def, especially if I'm going to be at any of the Formula D events this season. I'm working on trying to get to Road Atlanta and New Jersey as well. So hopefully I'll be able to see you at both of those. So it'll be fun, man. It'll be dope.
Oh, cool. Don't forget about Florida, too, if you're close.
I'm in Maryland, so, like, it's, you know, I'm in Maryland. I don't know if I had the budget for it. I had to beg and plead to make that happen. I'm going to try and get all my crew to go to at least Road Atlanta this year. I've been trying to get them to go to a drifting event for quite some time, and I think I can get most of my crew up here to go down for that. So we're going to try and make that happen. And everybody that listens to the show, they want me to go to Road Atlanta. So hopefully I'm going to make at least that happen. I'm hopefully going to at least make Road Atlanta happen, if not New Jersey, because New Jersey's literally closer.
Yeah, Atlanta's way closer, but Atlanta is so rad. That's such a rad track, and it's always a great event. Atlanta has such good fans, and the facility rules. That's one of my favorite events every year. So, I mean, I can definitely understand you trying to drag out all the way out to there.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of a hike, but you know what? It's all good, though, man. You know, no sweat, no pain, no gain. But let's jump into it, man. Can you sort of give us your backstory?
My backstory in drifting.
Sort of how you came to drifting. I mean, I think everybody's story is a little bit different, but one of the most common themes I hear is it came from action sports, so skateboarding, BMX, you know, everything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's similar to that. I was like, I'm from Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and I was, you know, going to school in Philly and stuff, and I was like riding BMX a lot. And went back home to Doylestown and met Forsberg. God, Forsberg was still in high school. We were like teenagers. Started just like riding BMX, having fun, and like sort of street racing our cars. We were tuning our cars. You know, we both had FCR X7s, like Turbo 2s at the time. And we would just kind of race them around on the streets. And we wanted to make them faster and, you know, more rowdy. And we started looking at Japanese, you know, nobody in the States at that time was even touching RX-7s, especially in the Northeast. It was all Mitsubishis and Hondas. So right. We started looking at, like, Japanese magazines and videos and even, like, the anime stuff. And we were, you know, just, we saw drifting. We're like, this is awesome. This looks reckless and super fun. This is what we should do with our cars because, you know, they're pretty good for it. So it just made sense. We started making our own parts and just getting inspiration where we could from videos and started to mess around here and there on the back roads in like rural Pennsylvania for about a year. And then I met Matt Petty and that crew at a barbecue, like 2002, I think. And really at that time, our entire scene in the Northeast was dominated by, like I said, Hondas and kids just like street racing around and ridiculous body kits and stuff like that. And for us, everything we did was so very different. It was, you know, kind of rock and roll and kind of, you know, like BMX and just
right.
Rough and tumble fun. And Petty was into that, and he was at the same time into the Japanese stuff. And he was like, he told me we should start some drift events, which sounded like about saying we should go fly to the moon. But we gave it a shot. We went to the closest track that we knew of. We went to Englishtown, Petty and myself, and we sat down with the owner. And we showed him an option video in the end of 2002. And, you know, we were just kids. And we expected to get laughed out of the meeting. But it was happened to be a young guy, really forward-thinking dude who thought it was really cool and said, you know, yeah, let me help you make this happen. He said, let's do 10 events the first year and go from there. And don't worry about insurance or crazy logistics. And I'll put it together. And you guys just show up and bring kids and we'll do it. And, you know, we've been running events there ever since. And wow. So that was yeah, we started in 2003. We had 60 kids show up to the first event to drive in the rain. It was wild. It was like we had tapped into some nerve, you know. It was, I guess kids were just sort of hit everybody all at once. So tons of kids came out. We almost couldn't believe we were even allowed to do it. And then we started driving from there. And, you know, at the end of that year, I think Ken mentioned this. I was listening to Ken's interview a little bit. The first right. driver search came out the end of June 2003. And Naoki from Club 4AG was cool enough to – we actually found out about it only about 10 days before it was going to go off. And Chris and I packed up our stuff. Naoki from 4AG gave us him, I believe his cousin's spot to enter. And we went out and saw, you know, American Drifting really for the first time outside of New Jersey.
Right.
Decided that we could play with everybody and you know, we'd like to really commit to it. And we had a blast with it. So we didn't do that well at the first search, but we knew it was something we could do. And I guess the rest is history, you know, came up, jumped right in 2004 and we're driving ever since.
Well, and I think the creation of Drift Alliance and, I mean, what was what created Drift Alliance? I mean, how many guys were with you guys when that got started?
Well, I guess it was, you know, it was my idea, I'd say, but right around the same time, you know, we already knew the first. We met Turk, we met JR from the first from the Englishtown events. That's where everybody, you know,
right.
met. And I wanted to do it was two things. It was like I wanted to do something that felt like our own. You know, we had taken
right.
this Japanese sport, but because we had no instruction really at all besides some videos and we had no parts and we had no direct links to Japan, which they kind of had out here on the West Coast,
right.
We kind of put our own spin on it. So I thought that like doing a kind of like, you know, rock and roll fun, something that sort of mirrored the BMX and skateboard teams we all knew would fit
right.
us a lot better. And then if we all band together, like, you know, we can kind of help each other out. We're a bit stronger as a group than we were by ourselves. So we
mm-hmm.
just did it, you know, and kids really responded to it.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think Drift Alliance, I mean, as a team, like that was one of the things that I always thought helped elevate the game a little bit, was seeing like teams come together, you know, just a group of people who live roughly in the same geographic area and they all go out and they all drift together and they have a great time. And do you feel like spending that much time together helped elevate your skills?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think any of them. What, you know, it was almost a daily thing. We'd go to the next event, somebody had picked up something new, and as soon as you saw Forsberg or somebody like able to do something better, then you try to do it, you know, as good as he could. That's the kind of stuff you need. You absolutely need, especially starting out, you need to find somebody who's better than you if you can, or as good, and just, you know, really find a rival and push each other. It's unbelievable what a difference that makes.
No, it makes tons of sense, and, you know, I totally respect that, and that's definitely something that's always had appeal. I mean, if the car show guys can have their teams, I mean, why not in drifting and other motorsports? I mean, that's, you guys definitely elevated it, and I really hope to see other teams show up. You know, I think it'll definitely add some fun, and especially Bloodmasters, which I think is the craziest thing yet. I totally love that, dude. It's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And I think you guys rolled it out in the right fashion with just the right amount of teasers. And very sexy, man. Great stuff. Great stuff. Whose
Thank
idea
you.
Was that?
That was mine and Matt Petty's. We actually thought it'd be really funny to have a drift kind of biker gang. And, you know, it's just fun and it's outrageous. And it's just something where we already were driving, like, you know, cheap missile cars. And
right.
once we did it a couple of times, we realized, and this actually comes from some stuff that we've all done. Like, you know, when Chris went to Japan a couple of years ago, I went to Japan a couple of years ago. I drove at one of the Matsuris, and I drove, you know, I met
right.
a couple of servicemen there who were super cool, and they let me drive their car all day. And I realized, like, you know, the fun and the enjoyment I get out of drifting is as much, if not more, if the car works fine and isn't some $1 million. You know, rocket ship, it's just as fun, you know, especially if you've got some other guys in similar cars. So just organically, we all bought last year just some, like, bang-around missile cars, and we drove. The first time we all drove together, it was just like magic. We're screaming at each other after each run and just laughing and having a good time and touching cars and rubbing, you know, swapping paint.
And we decided, like, this is awesome. And then, you know, one of the funniest things was Chris told me, you know, 2009 Formula D champion Forsberg was like, this is the hardest I've ever driven in my life. And I was like, this is the most fun I've ever had in a drift car. So we decided, like, why don't we just keep doing this? And from there, you know, we kind of tacked on the Bloodmasters thing and decided, like, let's just make some videos and see if people appreciate it as much as we did. And the response has just been tremendous. Like, people love it. It's almost, you know, it's been out, I think, 7-8 days, and it's just about to hit 500,000 views. So it's been pretty wild.
Yeah, man. You know, honestly, I think this is the new thing, man. I really think it is. And I think that if the other teams get out there, I mean, to me, this is where it's almost like dance crews. I mean, I don't want to make it sound cheesy or whatever, but, like, you know, high-level dancers, they go out as a group and they do a video, they throw it up on YouTube, and then some group in France will see it and they're like, oh, we can do that better. I mean, that sort of battling, if you will, I think will definitely help elevate the game. And more videos means more fans, means more butts in seats, means, you know, more swag. I mean, you know, Austin in the chat room here says it's like Dogtown. You know, it could be interesting, man. Very, very, very good stuff, man. I'm really excited about it, and I really want to see more. You guys got to push it next time.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're just getting started. We literally just want to show people, like, we felt like with English Town and how much fun they let us have, the owners there, same, you know, I told you before how cool they were. They had the track shut down in December, and they said, like, you just basically told us, like, just don't kill yourselves, and, you know, have fun. And that's what we, you know, nothing was open. So they, you know, obviously, see, we run around the drag strip. We go in the back. There's like a junk car. We rip through that road. We go wherever we want.
Right.
So, you know, we're really lucky to have that. And it was just, it's super fun. And, you know, we love that track, and they've done a ton for us. So it feels good to give them some promotion.
Yeah.
So if there's other crews out there that want to make better videos, they can bring it, because we're ready. Bloodmasters are ready for it.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I want to hear. The gauntlet has been thrown down. That's what I want to hear. dude, that's hot. No doubt. So when you were competing professionally, what cars were you driving at that point? I mean, how many cars have you driven up to this point?
Competed in? I guess I drove...
Yes.
Was almost always Mazda stuff. I drove... an FC the first year.
Right.
I drove an FD the second year. Most of the year, I think I drove an S13 once or twice that year. And then I wound up driving an S13 for 06. And then I went back to Mazda's and drove my RX-8 the last couple years that I competed.
And then you wound up as the tech manager for Formula D. Can you tell us a little bit about that job and sort of
I was a judge first. You know, after Dan, you know, my story is a little unusual, I think, because I came out pretty strong at the end of 04. Oh, I drove a Z. That's right. I drove a Z at the end of 04. I did really well.
Right.
And then, you know, I drove for Falcon in 05, and I was kind of a brash kid, and I made some mistakes here and there, and wound up parting ways at the end of the season, and it was sort of an uphill climb back from there. You know, I drove a 13, and my RX-8 was a work in progress, and it got better and better. And basically I realized, and what kind of bummed me out a little bit is that I felt like towards the end of 2008, like my car was working well and I felt like I was driving it pretty hard, but I felt like I had to drive extra hard to get the scores I deserved. So at the end of the year, I proposed to the guys at FD, like a simplified qualifying system. And that at that time they were already talking about doing top 32 tandem, which I was a huge supporter of. And when I showed them my qualifying system, which was like, you know, one judge for each thing, so it's less to look at, and it theoretically makes a extremely tough job just a little bit easier for the judges. They really liked it, you know, and it was also a way for me to put the emphasis on style and driving skill above you know, speed and stuff that's really budget driven and doesn't rely on driver skill. So that's another thing, you know, for me, the art of the drifting is paramount. That's what should be rewarded with scores. So they really liked it, and they said, why don't you be a judge and implement it? So I did that for 1 year, 2009, and I felt like the changes were really, really positive. I mean, even online, kids used to just, you know, go on and moan and moan and moan about the judging, and it really became pretty, pretty positive, which was, I felt really good about it. It was really rewarding. You know, I love the sport, and it means a lot to me, and to do what I feel like I've, you know, I made a pretty positive contribution with all the judging stuff. It was really cool. And then I guess, what, 2010, I wound up taking over the tech manager. I've ran my own team a couple of years. I'm pretty mechanically savvy, so I thought I could do a good job with that. And the last 2 years, I was both judge and tech manager. And I introduced some cool stuff like the tire rule, the tire to weight rule, which I thought would help lower budget teams and kind of, you know, basically put a cap on the grip that cars could make. Because again, that's something that's not really skill related. It's something that's more budget related and car builder related.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, and that's, I think for most people who aren't really familiar with drifting and the judging and sort of how that works, can you sort of give us the Cliff Notes version of how judging works?
Well, yeah, I mean, qualifying is, it's, that's the thing. Drifting is very abstract and it's a very unique sport. But what we look for is we'll give that people a predetermined line, you know, outside on the walls and hit the inside apexes. And, you know, that'll be a line score. And then there's a speed score, which is just how fast you run through the track. And then there is an angle score, which is not only, you know, basically you want to have as much angle as you can at any given time, but it's how you use angle, how you pour it on and how you take it off and sort of things like,
right.
Through, you know, big steering corrections and angle wavering and stuff like that. That's a detractor. And then style, which is sort of hard to quantify, but I feel like it's the easiest to understand where, you know, you throw it out there sick, you stick it, you don't waver, you don't make any corrections, and you look out of control, but you pull it off, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Well, you're really pushing the limit, that sort of style, and throttle, like throttle commitment and smoke and all that stuff, that comes into style.
Interesting. Yeah, and that's...
Oh, wait, and then there's tandem. So tandem is just
right.
Lead guy doing everything qualifying, and the guy, the chase car should be applying pressure and out, basically outdoing that driver while still being right on, you know, right on top of him.
And the term I hear used a lot by Jared is the moving clipping point.
Yeah.
And can you tell us about the clipping points?
Well, there was a couple of schools of thought when we started, and again, like I said, this is an evolution, and we're always there. You know, FD is cool because they're able to react, you know, pretty quickly to things. What we saw is that back in the day, there's that ideal line I told you about where we should all be on track.
Right.
So if the guy in front doesn't take that ideal line and the guy behind does, you wind up with separation between the cars, and that's just not fun to watch. So what we decided was, front guy, you do your best to stay on that line. But if it
right.
doesn't happen, rear guy, you stay right on top of that front car no matter what, because it takes skill to do that, and it takes, you know, it takes anticipation and it takes aggressive commitment, all that sort of stuff. So wherever that front car goes,
right.
you stay right on top. So that, you know, it's one of the things that we changed, I think, 2 years ago, just to make it, you know, again, more exciting. We're always trying to build, I think FD's done a really good job of making events more and more fun. I mean, for me, it's just been a straight progression. You know, you watch, the last event is always almost my favorite event. You know, it's always the craziest driving, the last one we do. So I think they're on a good trajectory, and it's really cool.
Well, I think everybody's looking forward to this season and seeing what we're, you know, everybody's looking forward to this season, flat out. A lot of big things. But let's talk about... Let's talk about you getting behind the wheel again. I think everybody's sort of been anxiously waiting to hear about you getting back behind the wheel. What was the decision like?
Well, you know, I love driving, and I feel like I did a pretty good job judging, and I was able to contribute what I can to the sport. But at the end of the day, I consider myself a driver. You know, I got to compete a little bit overseas during the last couple of years, but it's just not the same. You know, FD is the highest echelon of drifting. Formula Drift USA is you know, is the major leagues, and that's where I want to be, and it's what I want to be doing is driving and running against the best dudes there are. So I guess, geez, the middle of the year or even the beginning of the year, I knew I was gonna go back to driving, and it just took you know, me really committing to myself and saying I'm gonna do this 100% by, I guess, the end of the year. And just telling them, like, look, you know, I've worked really hard, but it's my time to go back into a car.
So here we are. Season's about to kick off not too long away from now. What are you going to be driving?
Yeah, well, I can tell you now, literally as of a couple of hours ago, I just got the green light for this. But I'm going to be driving I'm going to be driving the Scion TC that Ken drove last year. You know, it's a pretty awesome car. Ken's done some pretty great things with it, and I'm really excited to be in that car, and I'm really excited to be driving for Scion, a brand that's, you know, really fun and is doing really new things. And you've seen how committed they are to drifting with that FRS launch and everything they're doing. So I'm super stoked on it, and I think it's going to be a great year.
No doubt. So hopefully there's going to be some collaboration between you and Ken and talking about the car and getting some tips and tricks, and boom, you're going to be in the car.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. He's actually, you know, I'm going to pick, you know, he's flying in tomorrow night, and we're going to sit down over some drinks and talk it out. So, yeah, that's exactly the plan.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, man. That's amazing.
And the car, the thing is, you know, my last car, I absolutely loved the way it looked. I poured my whole heart and soul into that car, the way the car looked and was presented. I think it was pretty killer. And the new car is going to look radical. Like, we have a sweet livery that we're going to do with it. All the sponsors aren't nailed down. There's not a whole ton to talk about, really. But the look and feel of the car, we have pretty dialed. And I'll be putting that out in the press release in the morning, I believe.
Okay. Make sure I'm on that email list too, boss.
For sure.
man, that's sweet. So, tell us a little bit about the car, what you know.
To be honest, I don't know all that much. I know that it's been, you know, again, kind of a long evolution. Ken has had some ups and downs with it, but as far as I know now, it makes a lot of horsepower. It's good, you know, it's actually almost exactly the same wheelbase as an RX-8. It's within like 2 millimeters, so I think it'll be a car I've become comfortable with really quickly.
Okay.
Overall size is the same. Actually, weight's pretty close, so I think it's going to be a car that I'll jump right in and really like. So, and, you know, like I said, Scion is super supportive and just doing the coolest stuff right now. So I'm happy, and, you know, I'm going to get, and the thing with me, again, sort of like Ken was saying, you know, I'm all about the social media stuff. So I'm going to be putting up videos. As soon as I get my hands on that thing, you'll see it. You know, as I learn the stuff, I'll be putting out, you know, fun videos of us testing it and ripping it around and doing burnouts in it. So just stay on top of this stuff.
That is awesome. I'm super happy about that. I can't imagine, you know, too many well-built drift cars just sort of hitting the garage and not going anywhere. But I believe that you going into Ken Gucci's car was one of the rumors that was floating around. And so now that the word is out and it is confirmed, I think everybody's like, yeah, you're going into a pretty solid car. And so I think, you know, I think maybe the learning curve might be steep. But, you know, as a driver, like you said, that you're going to jump into it and it's going to be really nice and work out for you. And I think everybody's really excited for that, because, you know, if you were going into something completely different that you weren't familiar with, some people might try and write you off for the season as sort of a development season. But say you're going into this car, you know, I don't think you're going to have, you know, too much of that. I think you'll jump in and do well.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. Again, it's something that works and is comfortable. And, you know, that car works well. You saw what Ken was able to do with it at Irwindale. And, you know, I have high hopes. And I think we're going to be able to jump right in and come out swinging at the first event.
Very cool. So who's all going to be on your team?
Well, right now we have Lindsey Ross, who is an old Drift Alliance ace. And he works over at Hoonigan now. He does all the design work on the car. He's going to be my spotter and kind of my go-to guy. And then Mike Edwards, Carluch, who's on the Bloodmasters crew and on DA Aces 2, is going to be he's going to be at the events wrenching on the car. And Jesse Ian is going to do all my, you know, keeping everybody informed of what's going on through Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. And then as far as sort of an engineer and stuff like that, we're working on that right now. Like I said, you know, this deal is sort of just still coming together. So there's going to be lots more announcements in the near future. Hello?
Yep, sorry about that.
Yeah, what happened over there?
You know, for whatever reason, I'm dealing with old technology, and my old technology likes to quit after a certain period of time. But, yeah, you know, I need a new laptop. So if anybody wants to help sponsor the show by buying a laptop, we could definitely take care of that, and we'll make sure you get a very nice advertisement on the show. Well, I'm really glad that you're going to get a good team around you, and I'm very excited about this season. No doubt I'll be at least in the chat room on the Drift stream. Big shout out to Bell One Racing. You know, so everybody can look for more details to be released tomorrow about the car. India, you will see the actual livery.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have the basic version out tomorrow, so you'll be able to see it.
Very cool. There is a question in the chat room about is there a difference in drifting, I guess, maybe skills or style between West Coast and East Coast?
I think so. I definitely think so. I mean, I feel like I said before, what, you know, the West Coast was kind of, at least initially, kind of derivative of Japan, and the East Coast kids kind of came out and did, were kind of a little gnarlier, a little bit, you know, more aggressive and more rough around the edges. But you can see it, I think, in a driver's style where they sort of came from, if you came out of West Coast drifting proper or East Coast, you know, the Northeast.
Right. So with that, you also had Hold the Line, which I think that was your put together, right?
Yeah, I just want, you know, I wasn't, I had enough time last year to run a Formula D Pro-Am. We ran one at Monticello and the rest at Englishtown, just trying to give
right.
back. You know, I don't want kids to have to drive all the way down to, you know, wherever the next closest Pro-Am was. And I thought that the Northeast was kind of underserved. And, you know, I know there's a lot of good kids up there. So, you know, we did a little Pro-Am. It was really fun. Very basic kind of do-it-yourself kind of thing. But, you know, good response from the drivers. We had a ton of fun doing it. And, you know, some kids got their licenses. They really deserve them. So I was happy with it.
We'll hold the line, sort of keep going for this season, or will somebody else take it over for you while you're out driving?
I think we're going to take this year off. We just don't have the time to run it right now.
Okay.
And tentatively get back to it. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Northeast Pro-Am next year. So, you know, if you guys are up there in the Northeast waiting and trying to drive, like, you know, just keep it together and we'll get everything running when we can.
Yeah, everybody, definitely hold out. You know, keep out there practicing, keep training. You know, when Hold Line comes back, be ready. There's a question about would you run Pikes Peak with the Scion?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be really fun to do. You know, it's definitely a fast car, and now that it's all asphalt, right? And there's a
pretty much.
Yeah, that would sound really fun. I love racing. You know, any kind of stuff you can do with a car that's, you know, competitive, I think is pretty rad. You know, initially as a kid, I was just like a drift rat, and I thought, you know, that was it. But, you know, just getting involved in some low-budget racing stuff, you know, we did a Lemons race once, and we just had an absolute blast. So I would totally do it.
Oh, the Lemons races are definitely ones for ingenuity and a lot of style, no doubt. What kind of car did you guys run in the Lemons race?
Yeah, see, here's the thing. We didn't get super wildly creative. We just drove a 240.
Really?
Me and Forsberg, JR, and Turk. We were pretty creative with our team look and name and stuff. We did, like, an Anchorman theme because we kind of looked at ourselves and realized that the four of us translate pretty well into that.
Right.
With JR being champ and Chris did, you know, Ron Burgundy, and I did Paul Rudd's character. And then we did like a big saddle. We did a DirecTV dish in the car and vinyl it up like the van. We had an absolute blast. We didn't know how we would do it all because some of those cars are out of control. We got penalized right when we got there because they yelled at us for being drifters, and they were kind of jerks. But I think we got
really?
To like 11th overall before we got black flagged and thrown out.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's those guys' party, so they can kind of make the rules. And, you know, I feel like they kind of gave it to us pretty hard just being a bunch of pro drifter dudes trying to come in and party. But, you know, it was seriously some of the most fun we've had. And we did it at Thunder Hill, which is an incredible racetrack.
See, now I'm thinking you guys got to do that again, but bring the entire fan club, bring everybody with you. And let them try and throw you guys out again. It's not going to happen.
That would be fun. Yeah, we could bring like a whole Blood Masters crew up there or something and just
see
how
that
works
hatchets and all, man. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Totally awesome. Well, Tony, man, we gotta keep up with you this season. Where can we go to keep up with you and get more details?
You can go to facebook.com/TangeloDrift or twitter.com/TangeloDrift. And I have a website in the works. I don't know what it's going to be called yet, though. Something similar to that.
Well, let us know, and we'll make sure we spread it out amongst our distribution channels. Tony, we got to have you back on throughout the season, man. Let us know how the car is working out and how everything's going.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was good talking.
Hey, no problem. Everybody, Tony Angelo, definitely check him out. Hit up his Facebook. Hit up his Twitter. We're going to make sure all those things are in the post for the show. Tony, it's been an honor, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, cool. I look forward to it.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too. See ya.
See ya. Well, everybody, that's been Moto IQ Radio. I hope everybody had a good time. It's definitely been fun. Next week, we're going to have Rob Cordona from World Racing, part of Christian Rado's world-class time attack team. And we're going to have Jason Deanhart from Global Time Attack on the show next week. And tomorrow night at 4:20 p.m. PST, Global Time Attack does a webisode. Definitely go to globaltimeattack.com around 4:20 tomorrow Pacific Standard Time, and you guys will check out the webisode for the show. Yeah, I know, 4:20. Who knows? You guys ask them. I can tell you. But I want to give some shout-outs. Shout-outs go to Beth Christ, Death Motion, Drew, what's up? AMS Motorsports, Female Racing News, Studio Road, Tony Angelo, Ken Gucci, Jay Thornton from Diamond Performance, Joey Walnuts, Jamari Harsh, J-Rod, Jared Deanda, Daryl from Bell One, Tom Macero, Brian and Aaron from Nacho Speed Garage, Cognition, N-Sport Garage, Carrie Ann, Scott, and Professional Awesome. You know, big shout-outs to everybody. Everybody's in the chat room. Motor Mavens, I see you. Miss Manila, Big Jake, Scott, Mike, Austin, everybody. I really appreciate you guys coming to check out the show. Big Jake, Tony was talking about at Lemons, you have to do some sort of theme for your team, and they did a Anchorman theme. I don't know if there's any YouTube videos or anything like that, but if you find anything, definitely go to MotoIQ.com and put in the post for this show. That way everybody can see it. But I'm going to wrap this up. My throat is giving out on me as we speak, and I'm going to go take a shot at NyQuil and call it an evening. So I really appreciate everybody checking out the show. Spread the love, guys. Tell your friends. Tell everybody. Moto IQ Radio is a fun show. Lots of information, good conversation, and very interactive. Please spread the love. You guys can contact me, Will, at MotoIQ.com, on Twitter, at MotoIQ Radio. You can hit me up there, either one of those two places. If you want to look at the show, you can go to MotoIQ.com and look for MotoIQ Radio. You can see all our past shows there. And if you want to advertise on this show, you can hit me up, Will, at MotoIQ.com, or Martin Gonzalez, that's M. Gonzalez, at MotoIQ.com. And if you want to advertise on this show, it'd be greatly appreciated, and it'll definitely get out there and spread some love. With that, I will wrap it up. You guys have a good day, and this show will be available for download directly after this show is closed. So if you missed the first half, you can go back in and check it out. So big shout out to everybody. Much love and respect. See you guys next week. Rob Cordona, Jason Deanhart, Time Attack Conversations, and World Racing. Have a good evening. Peace, love, and hair grease.